Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, this 27th day of November, 2023. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Danny Suras. We'll be picking up on some current events of special interest after the break. I want to begin, however, with a couple of developments in terms of the latest news, including from Ukraine. Secret Biden and Schultz plan for Ukraine leak. Zelensky should negotiate with Russian, accept brutal compromises. Yeah, the President of the United States and the Chancellor of Germany have proposed that Zelensky should bite the bullet. After over $100 billion in unaccounted for U.S. taxpayer dollars was funneled off to Ukraine, U.S. President Biden and German Chancellor Schultz have a new plan. According to Germany's Bild newspaper, the secret plan, how secret can it be if we know it, calls on Ukrainian President Zelensky to come to the realization things cannot go on like this, and he should explain to his nation that negotiations must be conducted. The latest German-U.S. plan involves the U.S. and West supplying Ukraine with enough weapons to hold the current front, not likely, and give up any expectation of recapturing the lost eastern territories taken by Russia. That's a certainty. This explosive report reveals Chancellor Schultz and President Biden want to bring the Russia-Ukraine war to an end soon. Zelensky should be forced in a very specific way to negotiate with the Kremlin. They call him Dictator Putin, my guy, and accept brutal compromises. Meanwhile, when you talk about unaccounted for taxpayer money, Kim.com has just tweeted U.S. dollars at work. Zelensky allegedly bought two yachts via proxy worth over $75 million, as reported by The Islander. The names of the yachts are an insult to all Ukrainians. Lucky me and my legacy. These yachts are plush. Meanwhile, I can't think of a better way to start the day than with Colonel Douglas McGregor giving us an update on what's going on here. Stand by.
It was on the front page of the Daily Mail. You're a colonel. He's a colonel. I thought I would just throw it out there. Okay.
So we're not all electronically linked, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Couple of questions, and then I know you have to get off. Since the October attack on Israel, the U.S. military has had an increase in attacks in Iraq and Syria. Do you think as the Israel-Gaza situation continues that the United States military bases and units will become increasingly under threat around the world?
Well, I don't know about around the world, but very definitely inside the Islamic world. when I was in the building and before I went into the building and I first interviewed with the president for another position, I warned about the situation in Turkey. I felt strongly that we should get our forces out of there. If you go back to 2003, you will remember that the Turks denied us access to moving our forces through Turkey into Iraq. And everyone was shocked. But nobody knows the truth or the historical record. When we first went in to Iraq, the Turks were apoplectic. They were apoplectic because the Turks, of course, regard the Iranians as a rival. They saw Saddam Hussein, for a whole range of reasons, as essentially a bulwark against Iran. They didn't want us to go in there and to stabilize the country. And they knew, because Iraq is another artificial construct. It's not a real country in the sense that we think of ourselves in Europe as nations. You could argue that we in the West, in the United States, are an artificial construct in many ways. We weren't always that way, but increasingly it looks that way. But that's not true in the Middle East. Iraq was drawn up along with Jordan and a number of other countries at the Versailles Peace Conference. So they said, look, he may not be perfect, but the country is stable. We can do business with it. We can live with it. And he's focused primarily or disproportionately on Iran. We ignored it. We went back in 2003 and did more damage. We created the Kurdish monster in many respects that now threatens or has been threatening Turkey for some time, despite Mr. Erdogan's best efforts to try and tame that. So the Turks look at us and say, you're nothing but trouble. You've caused us unending heartache. Same thing is true in most of the Arab countries. But I think we need to understand that. And Americans, they don't. You know, we're back to this. So the Americans wear the white hats. We're the good guys. We come in, peace, love, and harmony burst out from every direction. No, it's not the case. So we need to get those troops out. Donald Trump wanted to get them out when I was there in November and December and early January. He wanted them out of Iraq. He wanted them out of Syria. He was obstructed. He was obstructed by his own party on the Hill. He was obstructed by numerous lobbies. Because the argument was, well, we have to stay there because of the Iranian threat. Well, the Iranian threat was already in Iraq. The Iranians have been running the show there almost from November of 2003 until the present. We could never have had any modicum of stability in that country if the Iranians hadn't intervened with the Shiites in the south so that we could deal with the Sunnis in the middle by either buying them off with cash or killing them. So the whole thing has been a facade of stability that was never there. We need to get out. Syria is another one. And our positions in these countries are, by any stretch of the imagination, illegal. The Iraqi parliament voted us out back in 2020, said, get out, leave our country. So much for our respect for democracy. We said, oh, sorry, can't do that. We're staying. Syria is another case. We are there illegally. There's nothing there that justifies our presence or control of this tiny oil spot that's up in the northeast of the country. And now we are viewed as unwanted aliens and potentially threatening, not just to the Iranians and the Iranian proxy and militias, but by the Sunnis and the Turks. So we need to get out, but we won't get out. We'll stay, and things are going to get a lot worse. And it's going to be very difficult to rescue them. A friend of mine in the building gave me a good comparison. It's a bad, bad thought, but it worries me a great deal. Most of your viewers will not remember World War II and Wake Island. Wake Island was this tiny island out in the vast Pacific. It was important to us for many reasons strategically, but it was indefensible. It was too small, couldn't possibly be defended. We wanted to get troops out, but we couldn't. So the Marines that were on Wake were lost. They were captured and went away. The same thing was true in the Philippines. We tried to get out of the Philippines through most of the 1930s. FDR actually empowered MacArthur with the president of the Philippines to make a deal for neutrality for the Philippines so that we could avoid a war with the Japanese in the event that they decided to seize the Philippines. All of these things failed. So we had 11,000 American soldiers captured on Bataan. We had 1,000 plus Marines and sailors captured on Wake Island. We have a history of this. This is not good. And once the enemy holds your soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, what are you left to do? What's your answer? global war, total war, world war? Why wait for the inevitable to occur? So I think we should get out of all of these places, but I hold the minority opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
I tell you, this guy really understands the Middle East, and virtually everyone else does not notice. Kudos to Trump for wanting to get us the hell out of Syria, get us the hell out of Iraq. We'd be so much better off had that been allowed to happen. Meanwhile, Nick Ullerstrom talks about Turkey as opposed to NATO. On November 19th, Turkey announced it's banning any U.S. and NATO ships from entering the Black Sea. A vast U.S. naval buildup is taking place in the eastern Mediterranean, but the Turkish straits are closed to them. The Turkish naval commander has said, "We declare we do not want NATO and America in the Black Sea." The decision was made after a phone call by Erdogan to Putin. Russia clearly is backing him. Turkey has refused to acknowledge Hamas as a terrorist organization, which, of course, it's a freedom-fighting organization. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, which annoys the U.S. Erdogan, however, by contrast, has called Israel a terrorist state, and rightly. In a speech to his Justice and Development Party, he stated, "Israel sticks to a strategy of total destruction of the city and its people. It is brutally wreaking state terror, deliberately bombing civilians on the run. I say openly, with a clear heart, that Israel is a terrorist state. Israel has been continuously committing rogue crimes for the last 40-plus days, deliberately targeting hospital streets and mosques in Gaza with the full backing of the West. He accused Netanyahu of carrying out the most heinous attack against women and children in all of history and threatening people with nuclear weapons. Turkish naval forces now present in the eastern Mediterranean are planning a large-scale exercise, which, by the rules of the game, means U.S. ships will have to get out of the way. Its declared aim to put an end to maritime terrorism. Many Arab nations will be participating. Turkey's relations with NATO have not been improving of late. Thank goodness there's one country with the nerve to describe Israel's actions correctly." Meanwhile, Moon of Alabama observes, "U.S. is helping Israel to commit and hide war crimes." Some headlines are just weird. "U.S. has sent Israel data on aid group location to try to prevent strikes at Politico." Anyone who has over the years watched the regular massacres committed by the Israeli occupation forces will immediately understand what the headline really means is this: U.S. providing Israel targeting data for bombing aid groups in Palestine. Real Politico headline meaning. Indeed, the Biden admin has been trying Israel with the location of humanitarian groups in Gaza for weeks to prevent strikes against their facilities. But Israel has continued to hit such sites. The information includes GPS coordinates of the medical facilities, information on movements of aid groups in Gaza, to the Israeli government for at least a month, according to three parties familiar with the communication, all were granted anonymity, fearing speaking publicly would make it more difficult for the aid groups to operate in Gaza, really, fearing the Israelis would retaliate against them for spilling the beans, or the United States for that matter. Israel has launched operations against Hamas in or near aid sites, including hospitals, leading to the destruction of buildings and the blocking of fuel and other critical supplies. This isn't a war against Hamas, but a war against the people of Palestine. The U.S. government knows it is complicit in the day-by-day war crimes perpetrated by the IDF. Its defense instinct is to try to do its best to hide the evidence such crimes were committed. Isn't that the American way? Biden admin officials see proof their strategy is working in hostage deal, Politico. "There was no sense that the pause would turn into a lengthier ceasefire," a senior admin official said. There was some concern in the admin about an unintended consequence of the pause. Get this. That would allow journalists broader access to Gaza, an opportunity to further illuminate the devastation there and turn public opinion against Israel. We don't let anyone know that. Don't let anyone know we're doing this. A note on the hostage deal. In the hours before any onset of temporary truces or longer lasting ceasefire, Israel will always increase its level of bombing and slaughter. Today, this written the day before the ceasefire initiated, will likely be the worst day the people in Gaza have ever experienced. Our role here is just grotesque. Meanwhile, 9/11 families are disgusted by a social media app or TikTok. On Friday, a group representing families affected by the 9/11 attacks expressed strong criticism of TikTok for allowing the circulation of a letter by Osama bin Laden. Terry Strada, the national chair of 9/11 Families United, emphasized the importance of recognizing bin Laden as a terrorist responsible for orchestrating the 9/11 attacks, which resulted in the death of nearly 3,000 Americans. Strada highlighted the profound impact of the tragedy on American families, expressing dismay at the apparent sympathy some younger Americans have shown toward bin Laden's extremist and anti-Semitic views even two decades after the attacks. 9/11 Families United, a coalition of families and survivors of the 9/11 attacks, has voiced its concern over the online resurgence of bin Laden's letter to America. The letter, written in 2002, sought to justify the targeting and killing of American civilians. It's gained attention online with some videos on TikTok showing support for bin Laden's perspective, encouraging others to read the letter, particularly in the context of U.S. support for Israel in its conflict with Hamas. TikTok, responding, stated that promotion of content related to the letter violates its policy against supporting terrorism and is working to remove such content. TikTok clarified the number of videos endorsing bin Laden views is relatively small, though some have attracted significant attention. Bin Laden, the leader behind these extremist views and architect of the 9/11 attack, was killed in 2011 by U.S. Special Forces. His death marked a significant moment in the global fight against terrorism. All that is what we are supposed to believe. But I published long ago Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truth, explaining that Osama was our man in Afghanistan. Republished in Islam Times. A film that may even take the Academy Award for Best Picture of 2012, raises serious moral issues, glorifies a political stunt, and is based on an historical fiction. It is the latest in Obama propaganda. Osama bin Laden was not killed on 2 May 2011 during a raid on a compound in Pakistan. He actually died in Afghanistan on or about 15 December 2001, and he was buried there in an unmarked grave. Local obituaries reported Osama's death at the time. Even Fox News and CNN, let me add, subsequently confirmed it. He was buried in an unmarked grave in accord with Muslim tradition. He did not die in Pakistan. Dick Holstrom has published about it. Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. David A. Griffin has a book about it. Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, and Scholars for 9/11 Truth has written about it. Osama was our man in Afghanistan. Even more importantly, the political context has been all but lost to history. Obama was on the hot seat for an apparently fake birth certificate, having troops in Pakistan and not closing Guantanamo, by alleging that the tip had come from a prisoner held there and using troop station in Pakistan. In a brilliant political stroke, he took his birth certificate off the front page, positioning himself for re-election. Osama was our man in Afghanistan. During the uprising against its occupation by Soviet forces, He was instrumental in securing Stinger missiles, which were used to shoot down their helicopters and planes. In an earlier film about Afghanistan, Charlie Wilson's War, Osama's role was conveniently omitted. It would have been embarrassing to have acknowledged the man behind 9/11 had been working for us. When most of the SEAL team involved in the raid were killed, when their helicopter was shot down in Afghanistan a few months later, it was not implausible to suppose that they might have been silenced. Osama and Al-Qaeda, which was the name given to our base in Afghanistan, had nothing to do with 9/11. Osama denied he was involved in 9/11, implicating a government within the government. Another prominent figure who has acknowledged the existence of a government within the government is William Jefferson Clinton, who admitted this is an entity over which he exercised no control. Research by experts at the Vancouver hearing 15 to 17 June 2012 has vindicated his claim. For U.S. neocons, with assistance from the Mossad and the complicity of the Pentagon, orchestrated 9/11. Here's a nice meme. You see an IDF soldier pointing at the Twin Towers and saying, "You can see here the Hamas tunnels leading to under these buildings." Of course. Meanwhile, if you want more, check out America Nuked on 9/11, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the DOD, and the Mossad, which Amazon has not banned. Meanwhile, Nightmare Thanksgiving report hits Biden. One dirty secret leaves America reeling. As we celebrate Thanksgiving, the White House wants you to know they've got your back. The Biden admin is bragging this year's dinner will be cheaper than 2022, when inflation actually made it the most expensive on record. But the White House shouldn't take that victory lap just yet, because the inflation brought about by Bidenomics continues to hurt working Americans. A new report has come out that put the administration to shame. Under Biden, more Americans are struggling, and it put a major strain on food banks, from Breitbart. The demand for local food banks is on the rise as soaring prices impact average Americans under President Biden. The increasing demand for food banks demonstrates how soaring inflation driven by Bidenomics negatively impacts lower-income families. We are seeing unprecedented demand, Jackie DiCarlo, chief executive of Mana Food Center, told the Washington Post. Food bank demand rose dramatically in the last few months. The Biden admin might be claiming inflation is down, but prices are much higher than they were before Biden entered office. That resulted in a cumulative effect on the price of food. Working Americans and low-income families are struggling to afford the basics. Rent is increasing, the cost of gasoline and utilities. Even a modest increase in the cost of food could harm many. As a result, demand for help from food banks, organizations that provide food to the needy, has grown. A chief executive of Mana Food Center said, "We are seeing unprecedented demand. That one food center has provided food to 5,781 families in October, more than its monthly high during the pandemic. Food for Others has given out 30% more food this year than in 2022. Capital Area Food Bank has given out 31% more food since July. Because inflation is making food more expensive, some families have no choice but to rely on food banks or other charitable organizations. These are the same families who receive help from the federal government in the form of SNAP food stamps. Even those with taxpayer-funded handouts, many find themselves unable to put food on the table. This isn't a third-world country ravaged by war. This is the United States of America. Joe Biden policies have appeared to benefit large corporations, foreign countries, illegal immigrants, and left-wing political groups, but not working Americans. Perhaps that's why 75% of respondents in a recent AP poll rated Biden's economy as poor. Meanwhile, John McLaughlin to Newsmax: no one can catch Trump in the primaries. Former President Trump and President Biden appear to have smooth sailing to their party's 2024 presidential nominations. And should they face each other again, Trump will win, pollster John McLaughlin told Newsmax. In our latest national poll of primary voters, we have Donald Trump now at 58%, but we have DeSantis at only 11, Haley at 8, Ramaswamy also at 8. He's a little bit ahead of her. McLaughlin, his boyfriend, works for Trump's campaign, told Eric Bowling, The Balance, and guest host Joan Pinon. One-on-one, Trump is crushing DeSantis 75 to 25. They have no place to go. He said their poll showed Trump with a 49 to 43 lead as of Wednesday in a head-to-head matchup with Biden. At a poll with more than 2020 Biden voters, because it modeled on the 2020 election, than Trump voters, and we're ahead. There's a Biden 2020 voter now voting for Donald Trump in 24. He said the Democrats are panicking. But the only other primary challenge is to Biden. Dean Phillips of Minnesota and author and spiritual guru Marianne Williamson can't catch him because he has a lock on their party. He's got the delegates, McLaughlin said. He's the only one filing in these primary races from South Carolina. He's going to crush Dean Phillips, who gets 3% of the vote. So it's going to be Trump-Biden again, and Trump will win. Well, let me just add, it's not going to be Trump-Biden because they're going to take Biden out and put in the governor of California. Gruesome, Newsom, I have no doubt about it. The party rules allow that. They're just going to find a pretext. But they want Gruesome, Newsom to be subject to scrutiny. That would be devastating in advance, so they're holding off to minimize. But he will be the nominee, I have no doubt. Meanwhile, RFK Jr. has observed about the JFK assassination. He's blasted the Biden admin for refusing to release a wreck of the documents. The John F. Kennedy Assassinate Record Act of 1992 mandate the document be eventually disclosed barring any national security risk. The initial was October 2007, where Trump released 100 related assassinations. I'll be back. My will get paid.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Before I bring in Danny Searas, I just want to mention, for those who want more about JFK, on my Twitter account, but also on my blog, you can find an 88-minute interview I did with Barnes Review History Hour on the JFK assassination of what happened on Elm Street on 22 November 1963. I also have published a piece by Laura Garineau, a Kennedy assassination, CIA did it theorists are covering for Israel, where I've embedded four of my presentation about JFK to give a contrast in emphasis. After 30 years of collaborative research with the best qualified experts to ever study the case, I remain open to alternative interpretation. Here's my best framework for understanding JFK. You distinguish between the sponsors, the facilitators, and the mechanics. I've added some of my presentations here for alternative cakes in comparison with the argument presented, including James Fetzer on JFK's assassination cover-up and JFK at 60 Minutes Conference. In addition, Jeremy Kuzmarov has done what I regard as quite a brilliant piece of work for Covert Action magazine. 60 years after JFK's death, it is more and more apparent that Kennedy was a victim of a palace coup spearheaded by Vice President Johnson. I think if you look at those three, you're going to find virtually everything you need to know about JFK, and I highly encourage you to do so. Everyone needs to understand this pivotal moment in American history. Danny, it's such a pleasure to have you back today. I'd like to invite your comments on any of the stories I've already covered to this point before we turn to the new ones you'd like to address.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Very clearly, Danny. Yes.
Yeah. You know, that JFK thing is very, very interesting, for sure. You know, a lot of, still have a lot of questions to this day, but, you know, I have no doubt after looking at much of your work that LBJ was behind the whole deal. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And Democrats have been desperate to conceal it. Jack Valenti, who is a JFK aide, he actually married a secretary of Lyndon, whom Lyndon had impregnated in the Oval Office. He had a habit of banging his secretaries right there in the Oval Office. Lady Bird actually came down and caught him at it on one occasion. And he thereafter left strict instructions the Secret Service should notify him whenever she left their personal quarters. Valenti was then the czar of Hollywood and went out of his way to trash Oliver Stone's magisterial film JFK, released in 1991, to ensure that it did not receive the Academy Award, which it fully deserved for Best Picture, without any doubt, which instead went to a bizarre film about a sadistic cannibal, Silence of the Lambs. So, you know, in my opinion, that film provides the most comprehensive, complete, and detailed presentation of what actually happened in Dealey Plaza on 22 November 1963 ever presented to the American people, with three caveats, which were not Oliver's fault. They were because Robert Groden, who was advising him, was keeping the information from him, to wit, that Lee Oswald was in the doorway of the book depository when the JFK motorcade passed by, meaning he not only cannot be the lone demented gunman, but one of the turned out to be eight different shooters. That was a second Oliver posit three hit teams, but actually there were eight different sponsors for the assassination: CIA, Mafia, Anti-Castro Cubans, Texas oil men, Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, Israel, Lyndon himself. Each of them put up their own hitman. There were actually eight shooters. I've been able to identify seven of the eight in terms of where they were positioned, the shots they took, and their effect. Eight, which appears to be the shooter for the Fed, is yet to be identified, but we have two photographs of him standing on the South Knoll by a tree where you'd think no one could have been concealed, holding his rifle in the possession of two different experts on JFK. These are two different photos confirming his presence. And then he did not know this. A print of him had been massively edited and reconstructed from the original film footage. The current film, Danny, has 487 frames. We discovered they removed around 100 turning from Houston on down because the driver, William Greer, mistook the frontage road for Elm Street, swung out too widely, nearly hit a concrete abutment, had to pause and get back in line, scene which would have shaken confidence in the American people and the Secret Service and drawn attention to their role in setting him up. I've identified 15 different indications of their participation in the assassination and the cover-up. And then, because JFK, although he'd been hit twice, once in the back, 5.5 inches below the collar just to the right of the spinal column by a shot that only went in as far as your second knuckle on your little finger, and in the throat by a shot that passed through the windshield en route to its target, he was or still appeared to be alive. So Greer got a signal from someone referred to as a Cuban in the sidewalk there, brought the vehicle to an abrupt halt. All the passengers were jostled forward. And by the way, we have confirmation from those who have seen what they call the other film, of whom I know five or six, some of whom have seen it as many as three times. And during the stop, Jack was hit in the back of the head, slumped forward. Jack eased it back up when he was hit in the right temple by a bullet that blew his brains out the back of his head, killing him instantly. David Mantic, the leading expert on the medical evidence, believes that there was yet a third hit to the head on the side of the head, virtually simultaneous. Anyhow, it's sad to say, but he wasn't going to be allowed to escape that day. Plan A was deeply plausible. If that didn't work, Plan B was the trademark where he was to speak, which was loaded with balconies and entrances. Secret Service didn't like it, but it was going ahead anyway. And then finally, Plan C, on the Johnson Ranch, where they were going to have a banquet, a barbecue in JFK's honor. That was the least desirable, but where LBJ had the most control. So, Danny, you're right. This was all the way with LBJ.
Yeah, very, very much so, sir. There's no doubt about that he was behind it. There are a lot of details about that. The one thing that I remember that really changed things for me was, I believe it was you were the one, if I'm not mistaken, that posted the photo, the original photo of Oswald in the doorway of the Book Suppository building. And when I saw that photo, I was quite taken back because I said, gee, if I can see this photo, I see him in the doorway as the limo is passing by. Everybody else can see it, but yet they still went forward with all their other theories when you can clearly see him standing in the doorway. I've always been taken by that photo being very significant on that day.
Yeah, Harold Weisberg published a series of books about the Warren Commission entitled Whitewash. And in the second volume, published 1966, in the last four pages, he explained how the Warren staff was becoming frantic about concealing the fact that Oswald had been in the doorway of the Book Depository that day, which, of course, shattered their official report. Stunning stuff, Danny. I published a dozen articles as we were defining his presence there, explained how, based on the height, the weight, the build, the shirt, and the T-shirt he was wearing at the time he was arrested, and the height, the weight, the build, the shirt, and the T-shirt of the man in the doorway, it's already clear it was Oswald. In fact, the Dallas police were so concerned about the similarity that they made him remove his richly textured, tattered, and torn overshirt he'd brought back from Russia. In fact, Marina, through another JFK expert, has confirmed laundering that shirt to make it less obvious he was the man in the doorway. But Danny, you're spot on. I mean, talk about dismembering one of the great frauds perpetrated by the American government on the American people. This is it.
Well, I would have to agree, sir. It's definitely up there. I mean, you know, it's a shame there are still people walking around out there that believe the original story that there was just one gunman and it was Oswald. And that story is still out there, still talked about in school. And it's really a shame that people haven't had a chance to look at all the detailed evidence that you've put forward showing that that's just not the case.
Well, it's pretty simple. You know, if you go to my blog and check out at least, you find four of my presentation embedded there. I think if you watch any one of them, you'll get the idea. Minsk is only focused on proving Oswald was in the doorway and that Roscoe White, who is CIA, was a body double for him in the backyard photographs. Danny, we found everything that he told Will Fritz, a homicide detective investigating the case, has turned out to be true. He said he was out front with Bill Shelley, one of his supervisors in the book depository. He was out front with Bill Shelley, one of his supervisors in the book depository. He told him when shown one of the backyard photographs that was someone else's body where his head had been pasted on, that he knew something about photography and eventually he'd be able to prove it. Well, of course, he didn't live long enough, but we have been able to prove it. Oswald was spot on and no more emphatically when he declared, "Did he shoot anyone? No, I'm just a patsy." He was exactly right. I mean, it's a stunning story. The whole story of Lee Oswald is actually a history of working for the American government, Danny. It's a story few have ever heard or understood.
You know, the other photograph that I think is worth mentioning, sir, is the photo that I believe you also showed of Bush Sr. standing there on the sidewalk with Bush Jr., if I remember correctly. And I always thought that was really interesting. And I know when I was in school and there was some talk about the JFK from a few different instructors, none of these photos, including the Oswald standing in the doorway, was ever shown. And also the photo of Bush Sr. being there with Jr., who he brought that day. And, you know, because they always try to stay with the original thing that Oswald was the only one that did it kind of story. But seeing that photo of Bush with Bush Jr. at that time was really, I thought I was quite taken back by that photo as well, sir.
Well, believe it or not, George Herbert Walker Bush was a supervisor of the assassination. He was in the Dow Tax with an anti-Castro Cuban by the name of Nestor Tony Escadro, who fired three shots from a Mannlicher Carcano, the only unsilenced weapon to create the acoustical impression of only three shots having been fired, and was actually arrested when he came out of the Dow Tax, identifying himself as an independent Houston oil man, which was his cover with the agency. We have separate photographs of W coming out and looking lost because his father was being questioned about the assassination. And we have other photographs of Edward Lansdale, who was an Air Force general responsible for assassinations around the world, who ran the Operation Phoenix in Vietnam, for example, and who is not only walking past the three tramp, but waiting to speak to George H.W. Bush in the aftermath, where it appears that Lansdale positioned the shooters and determined the sequence of shots. That's how it went down, Danny. For more, just check out those presentations I've linked there. They're also available on my Twitter site, at Jim Fetzer, and on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Danny, today you wanted to talk about a couple of interesting cases about the New Hampshire Walmart shooter and Derek Chauvin. Give us your thoughts, Danny.
Well, you know, the other day, sir, a lot of people might have missed it. It didn't it got quite a bit of press, but it didn't get the, you know, what I would call the Sandy Hook press, was the shooting in New Hampshire. And what caught my ear about that particular shooting was right away the press throughout the type of gun that he used. And I thought, well, that's really interesting, throwing out the gun so quickly, even throwing out the gun before they put the suspect out. And when I started looking into that, it just caught my attention based on those facts. And then there was a lot of details that they gave, but then there was a lot of details missing. And you can see in some of my notes that I sent you, there's a lot of issue going on with this shooting. And, you know, this looks like another false flag to me.
Yeah, let me share them with our audience. New Hampshire hospital shooter identified, John Maddor, shooter, 33 years old. He used an AR-style 9mm pistol. The courts have just ruled these AR pistols are legal after a ban was overturned. No body cam footage from the police, no surveillance video from the hospital, just a story about a transient man with a gun. Here are some of your notes. Shooter was 33 years old, the number 33 code for a false flag. We see it again and again. How old was the shooter? He was 33. What state was he from? What state was he born in? Did he have a criminal record? How did he get the gun? Why is there no police body cam footage? Why is there no hospital surveillance video? Why can't we see the surveillance video? Officials say they have video but won't show it. Why? If they had video that matched their story, they would show it. How about a few frames of the suspect holding the gun or walking into the hospital? The official doing the press conference is avoiding specific questions about the shooter and his background. Why? Well, Danny, I'd say this all adds up to a false flag, a stage event. Probably, I would predict nobody was actually killed, but they're making up it happened. Tell us more.
Well, sir, when I looked into it, you know, it's kind of ironic or funny that, you know, I look at so many of these shootings around the country. I like to analyze them, what's going on, particularly the police shootings. And we often have multiple angles of cameras that we can see all these shootings at. Particularly, I saw one the other day in a Walmart. And I'm like, you know, there's perfect video of the suspects that were robbing the store at the time. And I'm thinking, why is it that every time we have these particular events, these higher profile events where, you know, we see them on all the networks, all of a sudden we can never see any video? I mean, we can't, you know, Walmart has some of the best surveillance video there is. I mean, they zoom in on people's hands, they catch shoplifters. All hospitals have really good surveillance video, especially going and coming. Their parking lots are covered quite heavily as well. But yet the story goes that this guy walks into the parking lot after parking in the lot, walks in through the front entrance. So we don't have any video of that. And then he actually engages with two different police officers who all have body cameras, and we don't have any of that either. And why is it? And then why is it that the official said, well, you know, in fact, we do have video surveillance, but we're not going to show it to you. So he goes out of his way to say that they have it, but that they're not going to show it to you. And to this day, they still haven't released it, and there's been no more talk about it. Well, why in all these other real shootings, I'll call, we always get the video footage, and we can actually verify different things by looking at the footage. You know what I mean? What kind of gun he had, who was the person, what time of the day it was. You know, we can see a lot of things in the video. They're really good videos, but, you know, this is just another example of them saying we have video, not showing us any video, just giving us a story, basically on the news is all they gave us. And there's nothing else. We've got some B-roll around the hospital and stuff like that, but we don't have one single shred of evidence that any shooting took place at this place whatsoever. It's quite crazy.
Now, Danny, it's the hospital shooter who has used what they're trying to make out to be a short-barreled rifle with a brace. Is that right, or was that the Walmart shooter?
No. It's the hospital.
Yeah.
Hospital shooter is the one with the short AR with the brace on it, known as the AR pistol.
Here we have a video you provided talking about the decision.
So a federal district court in Texas issued a nationwide injunction which blocks the ATF's pistol brace rule in its entirety. And many of you have looming questions about what is legal right now and what happens now with pistol braces going forward. So let's talk about what's happening right now with pistol braces. First and foremost, I wanted to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving. Also, I hope you're getting some good deals on Black Friday. But one of the things I wanted to ask as far as a huge favor is that if you follow this channel, if you're subscribed to this channel, if you watch these videos here on YouTube, please go check out my audio podcast. I would love to prove many people are interested in the Second Amendment, and we have a large community here on YouTube on this channel, and I would love to also have all of your support over on the audio side. So again, thank you guys so much for all of your support. Happy Thanksgiving, and again, links down below if you're interested in the podcast. So like I mentioned in the intro, there's a lot we need to discuss in relation to the recent district court injunction, which blocked the ATF's pistol brace rule nationwide. Since that nationwide injunction has been issued, I have been getting absolutely flooded with questions about what is legal now in regards to pistol braces, what can people do, and what happens going forward. Now, I want to state from the outset that although I am a licensed and practicing attorney with experience working for national Second Amendment organizations, I am no way am providing legal advice in this video. Just want to state that from the outset. Although I'm an attorney, I am not providing you legal advice. Now, the primary case we're going to be talking about in this video is Brito v. ATF, and a lot of these questions stem from the order that was issued by Judge Matthew Kaczmarek. Recently, Judge Kaczmarek issued a preliminary injunction which blocked the pistol brace rule in its entirety while this case is currently proceeding forward in the lower court. The decision by Judge Kaczmarek springboarded off of the recent decision by Judge Reed O'Connor in a different case called Mock v. Garland, and again, Mock v. Garland also dealt with pistol braces. However, in the Brito case, the judge there, Kaczmarek, went the extra mile and granted a request for an injunction against the entire pistol brace rule, and that was a nationwide injunction. You may recall that the other pistol brace case that I'm referencing, which is Mock v. Garland, which was led by FPC, got a preliminary injunction, but only for the members of that organization, FPC. Then after, so if
Danny, what I like about that, of course, is that he banned it nationwide. I mean, I think this is a permanent injunction, if I got it right. So you're suggesting the hospital case was done as a way of countering, supposed to be showing how dangerous these are. But I mean, did the brace make any difference to anything anyway, Danny? It just sounds ridiculous.
Well, no, it doesn't make a difference, sir. But what I caught right away is they were putting a lot of emphasis, the official was that called this report, on this particular handgun pistol, they called it. And really what it is, it's kind of a short rifle. It's an AR-15 that's, 7 to 8 inches long. And it has what looks like a rifle stock on it, but instead the particular stock splits open and it'll fit around your wrist with a strap around your forearm. It was originally designed for handicapped people so they can shoot these shorter AR pistols and control them. Well, the ATF a few years back totally approved several of these devices as what's called a pistol brace. And they sent out letters to all the gun manufacturers around the country and all the dealers. So millions and millions of these guns were sold, okay? Because any rifle under 16 inches under the NFA rules is classified as a short-barreled rifle, and you need a special tax stamp and license to get anything that's shorter than 16 inches. So when they approved this pistol brace, millions of them are sold. Well, not only was it a pistol brace, but a lot of people, since it looked like a stock, a lot of people were able to take this short pistol and use it sort of like a rifle. They can take this pistol brace and put it up against their shoulder, and they can shoot it much more accurately than holding it out like a handgun and balancing it. And, people love that because it's a short AR. It's available in many calibers, pistol calibers is meant as rifle calibers. So it just becomes a superb home defense weapon, easy to carry up and down a hallway, much more accurate than a handgun. And they got very, very popular. And then all of a sudden, after Biden took over, there was a fight and the ATF switched over. And then the ATF sent out a letter saying that all these pistol brace ARs were now illegal overnight. I mean, just with a, you know, they just waved a magic wand. Well, they went back on their original decision after millions of more sold, because they can see the popularity, obviously, of law-abiding citizens buying them for, you know, home defense. They're quite useful for, like, hunters or fishermen to carry them in their boats, or people to carry them in a truck. And also the other phenomenon that nobody talks about is, because it was classified as a pistol, it was under your CCW license. So if you had a concealed carry license that covered your handgun, this particular AR pistol was classified as a pistol. So you could carry this around, same as a handgun, which was very, very popular as well. But then all of a sudden they changed the rule and said pistol braces are now rifle stocks. That's an illegal short-barreled rifle, and you have to turn them in, or, you know, we're going to prosecute you, kind of thing. And that battle went on for a long time. People had to take the brace off and go back to using it as a pistol, or get it registered as an SBR, which takes a long time, usually a year or longer, after you pay the paperwork. And then again, even if you did that, you couldn't use it under your CCW license. So there was a big fight, and there was a ton of cases in all kinds of the courts around the nation. They started banning them in different states, California, I think Connecticut, some, I can't keep up with all the states. But then, you know, there was a big fight in court, and so far they've lost every time they've gone to court over this. And this injunction by a couple of different judges, including a couple of cases, that they're now legal, and they were for sale all around the country, even on Black Friday. So, you know, right after that, all of a sudden we see this case where in Hampshire, where all of a sudden this guy has an AR pistol. They're not saying what caliber it was, but they're calling it an AR pistol. I think that's very interesting and very significant that this false flag comes on right on after these decisions are put out. I thought, okay, they're pushing the AR pistol now, and how they are, Danny, supposedly.
Danny, you make an impeccable point. When they want some case to counteract a decision favorable to the Second Amendment, they produce it. We'll be right back with Danny Searance after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war
is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me just add a bulletin that Mitchell has just informed me that an agreement has been made to extend the truce, the ceasefire in Gaza, for two more days. Frankly, the Israelis are losing. They've lost over 100 tanks and armored personnel carriers by rocket-propelled grenades that the Gazans have adapted to make them especially effective. This is a very good sign. Danny, here's a second of the three cases you wanted to discuss, the Walmart shooting in Ohio. According to the story, Ohio gunman shoots four inside Walmart, dies himself, inflicted gunshot. I think the last Walmart shooting I knew about was in Colorado, as I recall, where the gunman walked in wearing one kind of safari pants. And when he was arrested or found dead wearing another, I guess he decided, while I'm here shooting up the place, I'll just pick up a new pair of trow. These get absurd. Interesting, you say, of this case, how fast the feds were on the scene. FBI and ATF must have an office down the street from this small town location. They're shooting daily at Walmart in Chicago, Oakland, L.A., Philly, etc. The feds never show up to those shootings. I wonder why that is. I also find it interesting Walmart has some of the latest video surveillance technology made. They zoom in close to catch shoplifters. Why can't we see the video of the suspect or the shooting? Why can't we see the body cam footage from the responding police? The report also says the suspect used a rifle. I hope it was not one of those pesky AR rifles. The court ruled that are legal. Hard to shoot yourself with a rifle. It would have been much easier with a handgun. I'm sure they'll show us all the video in a few days when they get around to it. Danny, tell us about it.
Well, this is yet another one. I want to go back and talk about the gunman for the hospital, but this particular one struck right after that. You know, these false flags often come in pairs. And this one particular, sir, again, inside of Walmart. And I'd just like to point out to everybody that Walmart has, you know, they have deep pockets and they have some of the best surveillance video that's on the planet. And I've looked at some of it. I mean, they literally can zoom in on a person's hands to look for jewelry, look for people putting things in their pocket. It's quite amazing. It's almost like a casino level from Las Vegas surveillance video. And they have it, you know, placed all over the place on all the different departments. It's very, very, very good. And I don't think the public understands just how powerful their surveillance equipment is that they use these days. And then they have people that monitor this. They even watch and monitor their parking lots when people come in and come out, go in and out the front door. I mean, everything is monitored. But this is a case, sir, where we have a story, okay, and it's quite an elaborate story, but yet we can't see one single shred of footage. Now, on other Walmart shootings of the past, we have all kinds of footage. We have inside footage. We have body camera footage from the police. We always have multiple different angles of footage. But on this particular one, again, supposedly when a rifle is used, all we have is a story, and we don't have one single image, nothing in the parking lot, nothing in the store, from the store surveillance or from the police. And I find that very, very interesting that we can't see anything. They didn't release anything afterward. And it's so close to the New Hampshire shooting, again, calling out, saying it was a rifle. They didn't use the term AR, but they said it was a rifle. And then at the end, they say the shooter has shot himself. So the whole thing, again, is nothing but a story, sir, and just a no images, nothing to go on. It's just a story that they told with no proof whatsoever, sir. It kind of follows the New Hampshire script.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice, Danny. Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious this is another phony event. Now we have... Go ahead. Yeah, you wanted to go back to the other. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, if you could roll back to the image of that right there, leave it there. So one of the other things I'd like to point out is normally I don't get into, you know, the background of every single shooter. Don't have time for that, and I don't have interest, especially when we have video. But what I do is I say, okay, they showed this guy, and they named the suspect. And I thought, okay, he had this specific AR pistol that was just, it was banned for a while. Now it's legal again. And I thought that was really interesting. So anybody that would do this, right, this story of going into a hospital and shooting the hospital up must be a prior criminal, because all these shootings that I look at are always convicted felons that aren't supposed to have guns. And they have multiple criminal records. They've done multiple crimes in their life, and they have a lot of convictions on their records, right? And that's normally what you find when you look at this stuff, when you look at the real shooting. Well, again, I wanted to take a peek at this guy. So I looked him up with all the information that they put out, including saying that he was a transient. They wouldn't say what state he was from, but they did say where the area where he was living. So I looked at him and I thought, okay, this will be easy to find. At least we can see that he has a criminal record. Maybe we can see, you know, what kind of a person he is and kind of verify his character. Well, again, sir, guess what? He came up as a ghost. Now, I was able to find one person in the state that had that name with that approximate age. But again, it wasn't the person. I was able to verify that it's not the person that they're showing in the photo. As a matter of fact, he didn't even live in the area around this particular Walmart. So, you know, and the whole background didn't fit this guy's background or the description. So, again, we have a shooter that doesn't come up in the registry at all. He comes up as a ghost. We can't see that he's a real person. We can't see anything about him, where he lives. He just comes up as a complete ghost. And in these false flags, we often find that. And this is just another case where they're posting a picture of a guy that we have no idea who he really is. And why is it that on these occasions, these high-profile ones the media seems to post, we always come up with a ghost figure, and we can never look him up and see that, you know, he has a past criminal record, and he matches, and here's his driver's license photo, here's all his stuff. This guy comes up as a ghost, okay? And it's kind of the same with this Walmart shooter. So I just wanted to point that out again, and there's just a lot of other factors in this that show that this is just one of those events that they just played on national TV to attack this new ruling on these AR pistols, sir. That's my opinion.
Well, it's unbelievable how many of these phony events have been generated since Barack Obama legalized the use of propaganda on the American people by nullifying the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which made it illegal to do that. It's just outrageous. We've had one after another, after another, after another. In fact, your default position ought to be now, if you hear about a shooting that's getting a lot of publicity, it was stage. That ought to be your default. Unless you have evidence to the contrary, just assume it's another one more fake propaganda advertising public relations stunt by the government in the wake of Barack Obama's legalization thereof. The third story you have, Danny, Derek Chauvin stabbed in prison by another inmate. We all know this is not the same guy in the video. What's the point of this story? Now, we're looking at images, the mugshot of the guy in prison. And Danny, I got to agree with you. It sure doesn't look like the same guy. I'm going to tell us your take here, Danny. How you can tell, how you know this is not the same guy.
Well, sir, there's many factors in the photos. I've kind of taken a page out of your book, but the ears, people have to recognize that, there's different features on a person that never change unless they have some sort of radical plastic surgery. But one of them is the ear. Ear can be actually like a fingerprint. They use ears to identify bodies, identify people like they would teeth or fingerprints. And the ears on this particular subject, you can easily see, are completely different. Different shape, different size. The earlobe is different. All the pieces and parts of the ear are completely different. So I'm not sure why they did this. They had an actor play Derek Chauvin. We were able to show that there's no such thing as Derek Chauvin. He was never a policeman working for that police agency. As a matter of fact, none of the officers actually worked at that agency, because we looked them up and we can see their licensing if they had one, and they did not. They did not exist. But other than the fact that, again, the records don't show that they worked there or ever worked in that sort of work ever, or came up as a ghost, all of a sudden they give us these photos to look at. Well, how convenient. Well, after the actor in the video showed up, then they showed us pictures on the news of this particular Derek Chauvin being arrested, or, wearing some kind of a booking outfit. In totally different clothes. But then if you look at the hairline, it's different. The ears are different. The nose is different. The eyes are different. And I'm not really sure why or what happened to the original. Maybe the original actor went about his merry way and they wanted to put in a double. I'm not sure, all the reasons why they would do that. But there's no doubt about it that they've had maybe even as many as three of them now that are different. The one we saw in court the other day even looks different than this one in the orange jumpsuit.
So Danny, Joe,
interesting that the story came out the other day, so no doubt about it.
Yeah. Here we have Joe Bosubic reporting how Derek Chauvin asked the judge to void the guilty verdict. Let's take a look at a little bit of this clip and see what it has to tell us.
I think it's been enough time. I think people need to just hear this plainly. And we covered the trial of Derek Chauvin day in, day out. I covered every single minute of it. And I'm just going to come out here and say something as plain as I can. Derek Chauvin did not murder George Floyd. Derek Chauvin, the police officer, did not murder George Floyd. We as a country need to have a system of criminal justice. We do. But we can't have a system of political justice, of woke justice. It was woke justice that put Derek Chauvin behind bars. It was woke justice that got O.J. Simpson out of prison when he killed his ex-wife, nearly chopped her head off, and killed a waiter. This country stands at a precipice right now. Are we going to allow the forces of political correctness, political opinion, public opinion, mob rule, and mob justice to determine the course of our country? Or are we going to live in an ordered society where we can look at facts, we can look at reason, we can use rational argument to determine the outcome of events? We can't redefine murder because we want a police officer to go to jail. And because we want hashtag justice for George Floyd. The regime launched a color revolution, a domestic color revolution in 2020 in this country because they wanted to enact domestic change in our country. And they used and exploited the shocking and tragic death of Mr. Floyd as a means to their ends. Derek Chauvin didn't receive a fair trial, because here's how a trial like that would go. Was this hold permitted under the Minneapolis police code? Well, yes, it was. In fact, there are training slides. I pulled them up within a day of the video coming out. Shows you exactly how to do that. Number two, what did the autopsy say? The autopsy said there were no evidence of life-threatening injuries, and the autopsy said there was a lethal dose of fentanyl and other drugs in Mr. Floyd's system.
Danny, you know, looking at that image, I think that's even a different guy right there. Just fascinating. How many Derek Chauvins are there? Here, where you're noticing similarities in events that are occurring around the world. We got 25 May 2020 in Minneapolis, and May 28, 2020 in Paris. Again, you have a police officer kneeling on a suspect. The May 30th, 2020 in Madrid, Danny, that's just stunning. And I would point out, when you look on the left, Derek Chauvin is supposed to be kneeling on George Floyd, a point I'll make later. He appears to be completely bald. Meanwhile, here you have what's supposed to be the casket for him, I dare say. That body, to me, does not look like the body of the George Floyd guy that we've seen, that huge hulking guy who's supposed to have died from asphyxiation. When the medical examiner said, no, he died from a drug overdose, not from asphyxiation. And yet, of course, we get the emphasis, I can't breathe, which, interestingly, Danny, is an effect of a fentanyl overdose. You can't breathe. Your thoughts?
Well, just to go back to those images, sir, I try to focus on the evidence, you know, and not do too much storytelling. If you look at the casket photo, you can see that the upper torso doesn't look right, and also the legs are missing. In the photo, it looks like just a rubber dummy of some sort with no legs in the casket. Those were leaked photos during the funeral. There weren't very many. Those are the only two that I ever could come up with, because they said there were no photos or videos allowed. So obviously somebody got those photos. But, you know, the real George Floyd died 2 years prior to this event. And we've covered this at nauseam back when this happened. We were able to show how they shot this video ahead of time and then played it on the news as if it was real with a bunch of actors. We were able to show how his hair in one scene was long, in another scene it was short. And then I also have a photo there where you can actually see the police uncuffed him during the struggle. And you can see the actor George Floyd using his hand to position himself by the tire of the car to get the shot right in the photograph. And once a suspect is handcuffed, those handcuffs never come off for any reason until the suspect is booked into the jail. That's just an officer safety thing. You would never remove the handcuffs. And, of course, then we can clearly see in that photo is that the handcuffs are removed. The other thing that we can see is the Asian officer to the left in one of the photos doesn't have a magazine in his firearm. And that's quite common amongst actors for them to have handguns and not have the magazine in the weapon because they're just actors. You can clearly see there's no magazine in his gun. But I can tell you there's never a cop that leaves the locker room and forgets to put a magazine in his gun and rack around in there and double check his gun. And there's the photo right there. Double check what's called a chamber check. You pull the slide back. You want to see around is sitting in there ready to go right before you holster up and snap up.
Yeah, Danny, you were making that point. Once he's handcuffed, he's never unhandcuffed. But here he has a hand in front of his chest. Clearly not handcuffed because he was handcuffed behind his back. Here you see the handcuffing taking place. And I say, did the cop throw the guy down hard enough to knock off his hair? Just wondering, because I see he has hair when he's handcuffed, then all of a sudden he doesn't have hair. Ma, this is just so outrageous. Here's a little video mocking what we saw there, Danny. Let me play it, share it. You see the cops there, and you got the guy. There's the Asian guy. They're taking him off, and guess what? Guess what? He has no legs, Danny. He just like in the casket.
What am I going to do about my legs? His
arm is missing.
And his arm is missing too, Danny.
His arm is missing too, so his left arm.
So what I inferred is actually he was an African American airway training torso dummy from Sigma 7. It costs $4,360. Realistic facial features and skin tone, realistic biomechanics of jaw, neck, tongue, and epiglottis, supports celiac maneuver training, realistic mass distribution, reinforces proper patient positioning techniques. I mean, Danny, this is insulting beyond belief that they appear to have used this torso training dummy to fake out the alleged death of George Floyd. Danny, it is stunning to me even to this day.
Well, sir, you know, that video shows that not only is it a fake torso that they're using on the gurney with no legs missing, nobody can explain that. If you show that to somebody and say, how is it that his legs are missing and also his arms are missing? There's several photos on the gurney where his arms are missing. And then also, you pointed out the hair. When he's arrested, he has hair, but then down in the photo, his hair is missing. What that shows, sir, is that this was shot, and we clearly showed this when we reported back on this on the day when this happened back then. We went over it in detail and broke this video down where I was able to pull this image out of the video frame by frame. You can clearly see that all of a sudden he was handcuffed, and then the cuffs were removed during the struggle. That's just not going to happen. Even if a regular person thinks about it, how often do the police remove the handcuffs during a fight with a suspect to get him in the vehicle? We see him walking to the vehicle, get him into the vehicle. He seems to drop down because he doesn't want to get in the vehicle. And then the camera footage shuts off. How convenient. Why would it be edited off and shut off right at that particular moment? But then the next scene we see is an elaborate scene with witnesses on the sidewalk with this struggle on the other side of the car, on the traffic side, and his head is up against this tire. How he got over on that side of the car, they don't show us. They just cut right to that scene. But the problem is, all of a sudden, in that photo, he doesn't have any handcuffs on. And I'm thinking, okay, during the struggle, they're not going to remove the handcuffs when they're trying to get him into the back of the car and simply take him down to booking. And also, did they pull out a razor, as you conveniently talked about, and shave his head? 1 minute him having hair, and then the next minute during the struggle, somebody pulled out a razor blade and shaved his head really quick and then removed his handcuffs. So if you really look at this as a logical and use some critical thinking, sir, you can easily see that they shot this over multiple days and they put it together as one video. This George Floyd thing was nothing but a big giant psyop on the country, used, you know, for multiple reasons. We can go into, you know, go after Trump to create a political distraction, why they set up the voter fraud. I mean, there's just a whole host of reasons. We saw the protesters being, you know, in the George Soros buses and these luxury buses being bussed around the country. But a lot of them were paid felons, convicted felons that were involved in this. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. We showed anomaly after anomaly. We went after the witnesses that were on the sidewalk, the ones that the ID'd, and we found out that they're not who they say they are. Their names don't match their faces. I mean, we just broke this down angle after angle and went through this video. And even the gas station, I'll never forget, across the street when we stopped the video.
Yeah.
It shows that diesel was 99.
I know. When was the last time?
$0.99 a gallon, sir. It's quite expensive. It was, you know, $2 and something
cents
at that time, close to $3.
Yeah.
And when you see the 99 is just simply turn it upside down at 66, and then half of 66 is 33.
Dad.
So that price of diesel was nothing more than a code that they put in there. And they always put that number 33 in there to let everybody know that this is a false flag that we're in control of or we're creating. So you look for that 33 in any of these events, which we can see. We saw it very clearly in the Tennessee shooting. We've seen it in multiple shootings. And this, the other thing that was really funny is the police car they even used on this said the license plate said police on it. And I can tell you right now that none of the license plates for the Minnesota police say police on it. They all have a government license plate on there. It doesn't say police. And then again, we have the officer without a magazine. And I really want to emphasize this, sir, because, you know, using critical thinking, okay, when an officer goes to work, he goes to, typically, he gets into the locker room, he changes his clothes and stuff, he has all his gear in a locker, okay, he gets dressed up, ready to go, puts on his shoes and everything. The last thing he does is he puts on his belt, his safety equipment. When that goes in, usually the last thing is going to be a weapons check, okay? You're going to pull out your sidearm, your handgun. You're going to put the magazine in it. You're going to pull the slide back, okay? You're going to put a round in the chamber. Then you're going to do a quick chamber check, and you're going to make sure that round is in there ready to go. Because if you should have to draw your weapon, okay, during the course of the day, during your job, you want a round in the chamber, okay? You want it under what's called condition one, and you want it ready to go, okay? So in other words, if you were to touch that trigger, the weapon is going to fire, okay? And every officer does this. As a matter of fact, they've had some accidental discharges around the country in different locker rooms and police departments. So what they did is a lot of departments have this weapons tube or firearm tube. What it is a big PVC pipe that goes into the ground, and they fill it with sand. And what they require is they require the officers to go over to this pipe, pull a slide back, put the round in case their gun goes off. It goes off into this tube, and then they put the handgun into their holster.
Danny.
So the fact that he's missing his...
Danny, we're hitting a break. We'll be right back with Danny Suras, and we want to take your calls. 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Call us now.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Danny, while the lines are open and we await callers, 540-352-4452, this would be a perfect opportunity to call because all the lines are open, 540-352-4452. And I'm very apologetic that because of technical glitches, we've been unable to take calls for several shows. Please do take advantage of this opportunity to speak to Danny Souris and me. Very much so. Meanwhile, Danny, take a look at this photo again where he's being handcuffed behind his back and then on the ground with Derek Chauvin's knee on his neck. Notice, I not only observe he has hair when he's being arrested and he's bald when he's lying there, but the facial features do not align either. George Floyd had a big head. And he had kind of a blocky jaw. This guy does not have a big head or a blocky jaw. In fact, I dare say George Floyd had a very large nose. This guy does not. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think there's some scenes, sir, that we showed in that video where they actually had a body dummy on the ground. It wasn't the same person where the weight had drastically changed by maybe 50 or 60 pounds. And you can see it was a dummy, it wasn't a real person. So again, when they staged this, they used multiple different ways of shooting this. I believe it was done at two or three different days. And they used different types of body doubles or dummies to shoot this video. The other thing I'd like to point out, we don't have a photograph of it. It's probably not appropriate to show it on air. But the actor that they used, the one that they handcuffed with the hair, he's actually a porn star. And what I mean by
that is
been seen in multiple porn videos that you can see online. Of course, we're not going to show that.
Yeah.
But you can clearly see he's got the exact same tattoos in the exact same places on his chest and his arms. It's exactly the name. And his porn name, sir, was actually George Floyd.
His
okay?
porn name.
I thought that would be very...
The name of the porn star was George Floyd.
Yeah. That was his porn... So I wonder, you know, I wasn't able to get the dates on the porn videos, but they were shot before the George Floyd incident happened. So I thought, I wonder if that had something to do with how they picked this actor for that role. I don't know how or why they picked him. I wasn't able to nail that down exactly, but I thought it was really interesting that they used an actor that was actually a porn actor. They just made so many mistakes, sir, in this thing that anybody with any critical thinking skills at all, of which, you know, you're the master of teaching the critical thinking, would look at these and you can see this is a complete hoax and a complete fakery.
Love
at
it.
This point. Anybody that goes along with this is just crazy. I know an investigator that actually went to not to the funeral. He did go to the funeral, but he went to the cemetery afterward, and he wanted to get photos of the grave and stuff like that. And the caretakers were kind of standoffish, and then finally one caretaker came up and told him that there was no George Ford grave, whatever. They were telling him it was in this mausoleum. And there's, if you go to this graveyard to this day, he went there to kind of take photos of it. There, he was able to ascertain that there is no grave anywhere in the graveyard.
Yeah, very good. Just as they had fake funerals in Sandy Hook. Well, I'm pleased to say two regular callers are standing by. Paul, please join us. No longer in California, now in Nevada. Paul, glad to have you here. Your thoughts?
Yeah. So the first thing I'll just mention, and I don't want to get into a big back and forth about it, but, you know, the audio quality of Danny's call or whatever is always very, very poor. It's that way today. There's been a few moments where it was much more listenable. So I just want to say this again without going to back and forth. If you're on a speakerphone, you can't do that. You have to have a headset. If you're on a headset, you need a better headset. If you're not on Skype, you should probably try Skype. That would be my suggestion because it sounds like you're very distant, and in the background, there's a lot of, it sounds garbled, and I'm sure I'm not the only listener. So anyway, having said that, yes, you know, once again, you know, we're dealing with the fact that we're being ruled by essentially a theater company, more or less. And they've been doing this for a very long time. And Jim, despite what you say about Barack Obama and the Smith-Mundt Act, that doesn't matter. It's never mattered, just like the Constitution doesn't matter, unfortunately. I mean, they faked the moon landings, right? In the very same summer, when I was, I think, 13 going on 14 years old, they faked the moon landings, and then they faked the Charles Manson Sharon Tate murders. Okay, so, and who knows what they did before that. But since then, most major events, I'm sorry to say, are probably fake. You have to look at it that way. And so, therefore, you know, we can talk about it all we want, but, you know, it's not going to stop until these people are essentially physically or forcibly stopped. It's just sort of the way it is. And I just want to say a couple things
in response, Paul. We know about the audio issue. In fact, I had turned up the volume for Danny, and Mitchell was telling me the sound was good and much better. So I'm kind of puzzled about that. I'm asking Mitchell. In addition, you may or may not have heard me say that there are so many of these false flag stage events that ought to be your default position. In other words, if you hear about one of these shootings, absent evidence to contrary, you ought to assume it's phony or fake. And in the third place, I believe that nullifying the Smith-Mundt Act by the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act made it easier to recruit crisis actors for these events by being able to assure them that they're all legal. So I'm not 100% clear on what you – yeah, I think you were claiming they were going to do it regardless of whether it were legal or not, but I think it makes a difference that it was legalized. Go ahead.
Well, sure, they're going to do it whether it's legal or – that doesn't mean anything to these people. I mean, the whole monetary system, when you look at actual the laws, for example, on legal tender and so forth and currency and what actually constitutes money, everything they do is completely illegal and fraudulent. But just quickly to give you a little, shall we say, anecdotal thing from my life, right? So I think I told you about that couple I met recently. And I ended up saying, because it somehow it came up in a conversation, and I told this couple that nobody died in the Boston bombing and nobody died in Sandy Hook either. You know, I literally became Jim Fetzer's book right there at the bar. And of course, they just rejected me cold, right? Well, something similar happened just not that long ago with these two guys I was talking to in the sports bar, right? Sports book. One guy was a black guy that I've gotten to know. He's a fairly nice, friendly guy, and another guy is a white guy. Now, the white guy admitted in other parts of the conversation that he was basically a liberal. You know, he was like a Trump hater and all this kind of nonsense. But somehow, some way, the George Floyd thing came up because he talked about all these shootings, you know, with cops shooting unarmed black guys, you know. Now, I just wanted to call the guy a fag right there, because I can't stand faggoty whites that have this, you know, what I call sympathy for show, you know, sympathy for black people for show for other white people, because I can guarantee you he's never really encountered the kind of thug criminal blacks that exist out there. Otherwise, he wouldn't have this, you know, like I said. Anyway, long story short, of course, I went right into the whole George Floyd being fake and all that, right? And of course, their reaction, both of their parts, was just like anger. You know, essentially, like they couldn't believe, they were so mad at me that I would even think this way. And then the guy cracks to me, goes, "Oh, I suppose you think that Michelle Obama is a man, too." like one of those, like, I, you know, it was almost like, okay, I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, right? And I looked at him dead
right,
in the face.
That's
I go,
that's right.
I said, and you would have, you know, anybody would have been proud of me the way that I stood my ground like a man. I go, dude. She is not a she. It's 100% a man. And if you don't know that, you haven't looked. And I got another question for you. You recall the big funeral procession for George Floyd, right? Like big ornate horse-drawn carriage covered by all the networks. Who do you think paid for that? What do you think that the government and the networks and everybody just put up all the millions of dollars that thing had to cost? You know, and he just kind of looked at him and goes, "Yeah, they probably paid for it because they knew they were guilty." And I just laughed. I said, "Look, okay, so you want me to believe, hold these two opposing thoughts in my head at the same time. On the one hand, okay, you're all just niggers to them. They don't give a shit about you because you're just all niggers and it's all racism. And on the other hand, they open their pocket, their checkbook, and give you a big, huge state funeral covered by all the networks. Doesn't make any sense.
For the biggest nigger of them all."
Right, but this is what these people, the average person out there, is going to believe this crap because they're programmed to believe it, and it's just infuriating. All right, I'm done. Thank you for hearing it.
No, it's good stuff, Paul. Good stuff, good stuff. Stick around. Brian, join the conversation. Brian.
I just have to tell you about something I found on the internet, and I was talking to another talk show host, and he'd run into it, too. Is in 1972, it's a little off the subject, but it's not, because it kind of shows us the world we live in. There was a animal behavioral scientist named John Calhoun, and he was doing one of his behavioral scientific experiments, and it was called Universe 25. And he built a Utopia mouse village. It had little, you know, lob or areas where the mice could congregate. It had apartments with doors going in, doors going out, and it had all the food and water the mice could possibly need. And he was going to see what would happen when he put them in his mouse heaven. So he took four male and four female mice and put them in there, and before long, the population exploded to 2,200 mice. And then there was a certain group of the mice that became the elites, the oligarchs. They had certain spaces in the apartments where all the other mice couldn't go, and they'd have their thugs on the door to make sure the other mice didn't go in there. And they all became homosexual, the elites. They were into LGBT. And then the other poor mice that were really cramped, the females quit taking care of their young. They had like kind of like what would be for mice an abortion. You know, they'd be carrying their young, and suddenly one would drop, and they'd just say, "Well, hell with that one." And the whole thing just degenerated. Their population started really plummeting. And, you know, I thought, man, it just sounds like the world we live in.
Brian, I'd love it if you could send me a link to that. I love it. That's absolutely fascinating. I'm very much into the study of the relationship between biology and behavior. And this is a fascinating, absolutely fascinating study. Paul, did you want to comment on this?
No, that was very entertaining.
That's what I thought. It was really good. So anyway, the other thing I'd like to point out, I've always told you, Jim, that abortion is absolutely horrible because the dark use the energy from abortion for their dark rituals. And Cosmopolitan magazine came out with a how-to guide that if you're doing an abortion, how to do the dark rituals to accompany it. So, you know, that shows you right there what's going on.
It's such a complicated issue in terms of personal circumstance and all that. I'm very strongly pro-choice. I think the Supreme Court ruled properly in Roe v. Wade. We've discussed it intermittently. And I know probably all three of you disagree with me about it. Danny, did you want to comment on Brian or Paul's observations?
Well, I want to comment on what Paul said. I think it's really interesting what he said about having a discussion with a couple of people that he had met wherever he was at the time. I have sat down, sir, in a professional manner with several people in my life going over these kind of facts with a tablet and or a computer with photographs. And I can remember one particular professional being a doctor and being a very pretty smart guy. You would think he was pretty smart, but he was really stuck on George Floyd happened and that the police killed him and all that kind of thing. So I had met up with him for some coffee and I said, listen, I want to show you a couple of things, okay, just so you know, so you have some information that you can draw from if this subject comes up. And I started showing him the photos, and he looked at the photos and was zooming in, was almost in disbelief, particularly when I got to the license plate, the hair being there, the not being there, the handcuffs and the handcuffs being removed. And one that he was taken back was the magazine missing from the officer's firearm. I even showed him how I looked into the background of the officers and they weren't real. And then I showed him photos of the George Soros buses, a lot of it. But I showed him the picture of the gasoline or the diesel at 99 cents a gallon. I had all those photos ready to go. And I showed him all. And I said, look, this was the giant psyop that you fell into, known as a false flag. And it's very interesting, you being a doctor and having such a high education and being an observant person as a doctor, that you fell into the trap of thinking this is real. And I said, now that you know, it'll be interesting if you go forward and divulge this to people in a conversation, or will cognizant dissonance take over, which carries some embarrassment sometimes when people find out the truth. They get mad at actually the person that actually shows them the truth because it kind of shatters their world. It embarrasses them that they fell for the con, and often they won't talk to that person anymore, and that is quite common. That happens in all families when they learn something, and it's just the way cognizant is. So I had an interesting conversation with him, and he did admit that he didn't see any of the evidence that he's seen, but he said, how come, his question was, sir, how come they don't show this evidence on Fox News and CNN? That was his.
Really? Really?
No, this is the insanity of these people.
So, if I can jump in, sir, to Operation Mockingbird and still believe in the world that the news projects, that he was having a hard time with the medical doctor accepting the physical evidence that he was actually looking at that debunked the whole thing. And there were different things that I went through. George Floyd, there were some other shootings that I went through. And it was really interesting to look at his eyes, his face, and his expression, and how he acted. And then how his fallback was, well, I just don't understand why this isn't on Fox News. That doesn't make any sense to me, sir. So cognizant.
Right. So can I comment on that, please?
Believing these kind of things, they it's hard for them to take it back because they thought
it doesn't stop.
Danny, Paul, go ahead, Paul. Go ahead.
Right. So, there's been a lot of labels applied to this phenomenon, right? I don't know if cognitive dissonance is good enough, but it's just a reluctance it's almost like these people adopt it because part of their, what I call, intellectual and emotional substrate. There's the word that comes to my mind, right? In other words, it really does get programmed into people, and they will hold on to it no matter what. I went through it with one of my own family members, a brother who's a very smart guy. But when I first began trying to introduce him to the moon landing conspiracy, he was just essentially angry, just mad how stupid that is. Well, you know, how could I be whatever gullible? And it's just, this is the, and then again, to hold on to the, well, this would be on Fox News. I remember very clearly in the 90s talking about some other topic to a guy, customer of mine. And when I showed him and told him what it was, he goes, no, that can't be true. Because if it was, it would be on the CBS Evening News. He said those exact words. I remember this clear as day, standing outside on this guy's front lawn, talking to him, showing him, and he said, that would be on the CBS Evening News if it was true. So this is what we're dealing with. I'll just mention one other thing real quick, and you guys can go back to this, but there's another channel that I was listening to, an interview of a guy. He's written a book. I'm aware of this book now for a while now. It's called Will Vaccines Be the End of Us? By John Massaro. It's two S's and A-R-O. So John Massaro has written this book, Will Vaccines Be the End of Us? And I was listening to a two-part interview with him. And it took him 10 years, roughly, to put this book together from the time he first started considering to write it. And he's an educated professional, but he's not in medicine. And he was very thorough, went all the way back to the 1700s with Edward Jenner and the very first, you know, playing around with cow pus. That's what he did, is he took pus from cows and was injecting it into people, you know, for so-called cowpox and then later on smallpox. And, of course, it was just a complete and total fraud, you know, ridiculous, you know, voodoo-type science that people rejected at the time. And then all throughout the history, he goes through the whole history. And essentially he found that all these people involved, most of them were just terrible people and criminals and fraudsters and profiteers. You know, that's all it's really ever been. All the way up to Jonas Salk. He had a lot of very nasty things to say about Jonas Salk in his book as well. I have not read the book. I may. I don't have plans to. But here's the point that I'm getting to, and he mentioned this in the interview, which he found to be quite revealing. Is during approximately a multi-year period, right, he probably encountered friends, family members, and acquaintances, right, probably totaling about 50 people. And he just tried to tell them, educate them, and offer, here's the book, here, read the book, take a look at it for yourself. He said that maybe one person out of the 50 or so actually took him up on it and read the book, and he was able to have a good positive dialogue. Everybody else would not do the work. And so, Jim, I don't need to tell you, but this is one of the reasons that I've had a very angry and resentful personality, because I have discovered that most people are slackers and they will not put in any time. They will think what they think, and then they will reject what you tell them. And so, therefore, I just quickly go to mocking them if I think it's appropriate. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, Paul, I'm reminded of my interview with Bill O'Reilly in late 2006, where he was saying, well, if I were right, and I was talking about all the evidence that 9/11 had been an inside job, then it would be in the New York Times. But it's not in the New York Times, therefore I must be wrong. It was an equally shallow, superficial, colossally stupid argument. Brian, I know we haven't had you guys lately. Brian, squeeze one in, and then I'll turn it back to Danny. Brian.
Well, what you're looking at is black magic. The word magic comes from magnetics, okay? Your light has magnetics, and when you get bad information, it screws up your magnetics and your soul, and then you basically get everything screwed up, and then your ego mind is like your jailer. That's put there by the dark, okay? And so what you're dealing with is bad magnetics and fighting ego minds. So anyway, Mitchell, that's all I have to say.
Mitchell calls it the social placebo effect. Danny, your final thoughts for today, my friend. Great job, Danny.
Thank you, sir. Cognitive dissonance, sir, has many facets to it, and someday you might consider having a doctor on to explain it. But cognitive dissonance carries shame and embarrassment. So often when a person finds out a lie that they've believed for a long time, I've had this in family. I have a family member, a close family member, that was a professor at Stanford University. And, you know, I went through a lot of these facts with them, with photographs and stuff. He did the same thing, you know, well, this would be on Fox News. That's his favorite news channel. And I just said, it's not going to be on Fox News. They're not going to do this because they don't want the public to know. But I said, being that you're a college professor, you ought to be able to deduce facts and evidence as you see it. And he just kept saying, if this evidence were real, it was on Fox News. Well, then I noticed this person started to have some resentment because it brought on family conversation after that. And this often happens, sir, when you confront somebody with the truth and then you actually show them evidence of the truth, that the part of cognitive dissonance is embarrassment and shame. And that's the same with the Las Vegas shooting or the Sandy Hook or whatever.
Parkland.
They get so embarrassed that they believe the lie for so long that when the person gives them the evidence, they often go into a mode of shame or embarrassment, and they no longer want to talk to the person or associate with the person that actually showed them the evidence. I've ran into this many times over and over again. It's quite common that people get upset, okay, when you bring them news that refutes a belief that's in their head. It causes them pain.
Danny.
The cognitive dissonance is very powerful, and it's one of the reasons and one of the ways that they keep the public in dark. They're just in denial if it's not shown on television. Richard Nixon has a famous quote. His quote is, "The American people will believe anything as long as it's shown on television." He said that. And that is just so true. He was referring to cognitive dissonance. Anything you play on TV, somehow, because it comes across that box, must be true. And of course, sir, you spent a lifetime debunking all this stuff, and I want to thank you again in public for having me and going into this subject again today and allowing me to show you this evidence and presenting it to the public, because you're not afraid to show the evidence one way or another. You show the evidence and you talk about it. You're not just telling the story. And it's one of the reasons why I've been such a fan of yours for so long, or I got to actually come out with that.
Great job, Danny. Paul and Brian, thanks for the call. Spend as much time as you can with your friend, your family, the people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at...